August 20th, study at Talamon.
So again, those of you who have been there on Wednesdays, we've been doing this quarter a timeline of the Bible, and we've covered some of the happenings of Genesis, the people there and their ages and so forth. We've covered the 10 plagues, and last Wednesday I started a study on the judges. Not so much looking at the judges themselves, but what kind of relationships these judges have, these interconnections with other people we may have never thought of before. One thing I didn't do on Wednesday is kind of read the first couple chapters of Judges to see why we have these judges. And so let's turn there first, chapter 1 of Judges. And then, like I said, I'll review a little bit of what we went over Wednesday after that. Let's see if I get into Deborah. Judges chapter 1. After the death of Joshua, so we see our time frame here, the people of Israel inquired the Lord, "Who shall go up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them?" The Lord said, "Judah shall go up. Behold, I have given the land into his hand." And Judah said to Simeon, his brother, "Come up with me into the territory, brother. Allot it to me that we may fight against the Canaanites. And I likewise will go with you into the territory allotted to you." So Simeon went up with him. And then Judah went up with the Lord and gave the Canaanites and the Perizzites into their hand. And they defeated 10,000 of them at Bezek. They found Adoni-Bezek at Bezek and fought against him and defeated the Canaanites and the Perizzites. Adoni-Bezek fled, but they pursued him and caught him and cut off his thumbs and his big toes. And Adoni-Bezek said, 70 kings with their thumbs and their big toes cut off used to pick up scraps under my table. As I have done, so God has repaid me. And they brought him to Jerusalem, and he died there. The men of Judah fought against Jerusalem and captured it and struck it with the edge of the sword and set the city on fire. Afterward, the men of Judah went down to fight against the Canaanites who lived in the hill country in the Negeb, in the lowland. And Judah went against the Canaanites who lived in Hebron. Now the name of Hebron was formerly Kiriath Arba. And they defeated Sheshai and Amah and Talmah. And there they went against the inhabitants of Debir. The name of Debir was formerly Kiriath Sefer. And Caleb said, "He who attacks Kiriath Sefer and captures it, I will give him Akshah, my daughter, for a wife." And we talked about that last night, time with Othniel's relationship to him. Verse 13. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother, captured it, and he gave him Akshah, his daughter, for a wife. So we see here that Othniel married his cousin. When she had came to him, she urged him to ask her father for a field, and she dismounted from her donkey. Caleb said to her, "What do you want?" She said to him, "Give me a blessing. Since you have set me in the land of the Negeb, give me also springs of water." And Caleb gave her the upper springs and the lower springs. The descendants of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up with the people of Judah from the city of palms. We talked about that last time. What is the city of palms?
Jericho.
Into the wilderness of Judah, which lies in the Negeb near Arad. And they went and settled with the people. And Judah went with Simeon, his brother, and they defeated the Canaanites who inhabited Zephath and devoted it to destruction. So the name of the city was called Hormah. And Judah also captured Gaza with its territory, and Ashkelon with its territory, and Ekron with its territory. And the Lord said, or the Lord was with Judah, and he took possession of the hill country. But he could not drive out the inhabitants of the plain because they had chariots of iron. And Hebron was given to Caleb, as Moses had said, and he drove out from its three sons of Anak. And we talked about that, how it was promised to him, and he went to Joshua, and Joshua gave it to him. But the people of Benjamin did not drive out the Jebusites who lived in Jerusalem. So the Jebusites have lived with the people of Benjamin in Jerusalem to this day. The house of Joseph also went up against Bethel. The Lord was with him. The house of Joseph scouted out Bethel. Now the name of the city was formerly Luz. And the spies saw a man coming out of the city, and they said to him, "Please show us the way into the city, and we will deal kindly with you." And he showed them the way into the city. And they struck the city with the edge of the sword, but they let the man and all his family go. And the man went to the land of the Hittites and built a city and called its name Luz. That is its name to this day. Manasseh did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shean, and its villages, or Tanakh, and its villages, or the inhabitants of Dor, and its villages, or the inhabitants of Eblam, and its villages, or the inhabitants of Megiddo, and its villages. For the Canaanites persisted in dwelling in the land. When Israel grew strong, they put the Canaanites to forced labor, but did not drive them out completely. We're seeing this problem, this ongoing problem. They're not driving out completely. They're not doing as they were told. And Ephraim did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. So the Canaanites lived in Gezer among them. Zebulun did not drive out the inhabitants of Ketron or the inhabitants of Nahalol. So the Canaanites lived among them, but became subject to forced labor. Asher did not drive out the inhabitants of Aco or the inhabitants of Sidon or Alab or Akzib or Hilba or of Aphek or of Rehob. So the Asherites lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land, for they did not drive them out. Naphtali did not drive out the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh, or the inhabitants of Beth Anath. So they lived among the Canaanites, the inhabitants of the land. Nevertheless, the inhabitants of Beth Shemesh and Beth Anath became subject to forced labor for them. But again, they're still there, and they shouldn't be there. The Amorites pressed the people of Dan back into the hill country, for they did not allow them to come to the plain. The Amorites persisted in dwelling in Mount Heres and Ajalon, and Shalbim, and the hand of Joseph rested heavily on them, and they became subject to forced labor. And the border of the Amorites ran from the ascent of Akibrubim and Selah and upward. Chapter 2, we're going to see Israel's disobedience here. Now the angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you into the land that I swore to give to your fathers. I said, I will never break my covenant with you, and you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall break down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. Remember, they did not drive them out. God said, I did my part, you did not do your part. What is this that you have done? So now I say, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare to you. As soon as the angel of the Lord spoke these words to all the people of Israel, the people lifted up their voices and wept. And they called that name of the place Bochim, and they sacrificed there to the Lord. When Joshua dismissed the people of Israel went each into his inheritance to take possession of the land. But again, these people, they didn't drive them out. They're still there. And the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua, all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great work that the Lord had done for Israel. And Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died at the age of 110 years. And they buried him within the boundaries of his inheritance in Timnath-Heres, in the hill country of Ephraim, north of the mountain of Gash. All that generation also were gathered to their fathers, and there arose another generation after them who did not know the Lord or the work that he had done for Israel. Why did they not know the Lord? Well, they hadn't seen all these mighty works, but they hadn't been taught also these mighty works that had been done. It must generation by generation be retaught and retaught, and something failed there. The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went out after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them, bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. And they abandoned the Lord, served the Baals and the Ashtaroth. So the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, and he gave them over to plunderers who plundered them. And he sold them into the hand of their surrounding enemies, so that they could no longer withstand their enemies. Whenever they marched out, the hand of the Lord was against them for harm, as the Lord had warned, and as the Lord had sworn to them that they were in terrible distress. Then the Lord raised up judges who saved them out of the hand of those who plundered them. And we often think of judges, we think of what? Black robes? This is not the kind of judges. They wore armor most of the time. These were warriors, fighters, okay? So don't let that word, that term judges, trick you, because we'll reach a different type of word or definition for judges. Raise up judges who saved them out of the hand of those who plundered them. Yet they did not listen to their judges, for they whored after other gods and bowed down to them. They soon turned aside from the way in which their fathers had walked, who had obeyed the commandments of the Lord, and they did not do so. Whenever the Lord raised up judges for them, the Lord was with the judge, and he saved them from the hand of their enemies all the days of the judge. For the Lord was moved to pity by their groaning because of those who afflicted and oppressed them. But whenever the judge died, they turned back and were more corrupt than their fathers, going after other gods, serving them, bowing down to them. They did not drop any of their practices of their stubborn ways. And so the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And he said, because this people has transgressed my covenant that I commanded their fathers and have not obeyed my voice, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations that Joshua left when he died, in order to test Israel by them, whether they will take care to walk in the way of the Lord as their fathers did or not. And so the Lord left those nations, not driving them out quickly, and he did not give them into the hand of Joshua. Chapter 3. Now these are the nations that the Lord left to test Israel by them. That is all in Israel who had not experienced all the wars in Canaan. It was only in order that the generations of the people of Israel might know war, to teach war to those who had not known it before. These are the nations, the five lords of the Philistines and all the Canaanites and the Sidonians and the Hivites who lived on Mount Lebanon. From Mount Baal Hermon as far as Lebo Hamath, they were testing of the Israel to know whether Israel would obey the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses. And so the people of Israel lived among the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, the Jebusites. And their daughters they took to themselves for wives, and their own daughters they gave to their sons, and they served their gods. So in other words, they're intermarrying, they're intermingling. But what happens then? They're influenced by their ways and their gods and so forth. And this is why God warned them, get them out of here, drive them out. And they didn't do that, and now they're in this mess. With that, we see the first judge. And we talked about last time, Othniel. I won't go over everything we went over as far as the reading. But again, when we're doing this study, it's more about the interconnections of them. Not so much about Othniel, the judge himself, but how is he related to other people. We did note he was the first judge. He was the son of Kenaz. He was Caleb's nephew. Okay, he had Joshua and he had Caleb. They had that good report versus the 10 bad report. He married his uncle Caleb's daughter, Akshah. We saw that. And this, of course, is his cousin. He delivered Israel from Cushan Rishathaim, whom they had served for 8 years. So they'd been oppressed for 8 years. And we saw that they had peace for 40 years after he did that. In the background, as we talked about, as far as Caleb's concerned, we saw where Caleb was promised land for his good report. He had that good report, and God promised him land. The land you're standing on, when you come into here, this is going to be yours after spying that land out. We saw some time later, after they came and conquered some of the people, that he went to Joshua and says, you remember when God said, I can have this land? And Joshua said, I do. And so he fulfilled that promise. And then as we read earlier, that's when Caleb said, whoever defeats this person, I'll give my daughter to marry. And we saw Othniel was the one who did that. And then sometime after that, we see Othniel's time as a judge. And let's read that. Chapter 3, verse 7. The people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God and served the Baals and the Asheroth. Therefore, the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia. And the people of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years. But when the people of Israel cried out to the Lord raised up a deliverer for the people of Israel, who saved them. Othniel, the son of Kenaz, Caleb's younger brother. Kenaz being Caleb's younger brother, not Othniel. The Spirit of the Lord was upon him. He judged Israel. He went out to war. The Lord gave Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, into his hand. And his hand prevailed over Cushan-Rishathaim. So the land had rest for 40 years. And Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. Of course, they had this rest for 40 years. The next judge that we talked about was Ehud. Second judge, he was from Benjamin's tribe. He delivered Israel from Eglon, king of the Moabites, after 18 years of rule. We went to great length to describe who these Moabites were. We won't do that at this time. He's left-handed. Afterwards, after he serves as judge, they had peace for 80 years. We did make note of a lot of terms meaning giants. If you all remember that conversation we had about Anakim and so forth, and Rephaim and Nephilim and so forth. There were giants in the land. We learned that there were giants before the flood. There were giants after the flood. Okay? And some of these people they had to drive out were giants. And the point we made was God was with them to help them defeat these giant people, these men of war. We know that the Moabites and the Ammonites as well came from Lot when he was with his two daughters. Judges chapter 3, verse 12. People of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He gathered to himself the Ammonites and the Amalekites, and he went and defeated Israel. And they took possession of the city of Palms, that's Jericho. The people of Israel served Eglon, king of Moab, 18 years. So again, after this rest they had from the first judge, there's 18 years of oppression here, and this happens. The people of Israel cried out to the Lord, and the Lord raised up for them a deliverer, Ehud, son of Gera, the Benjamite, a left-handed man. The people of Israel sent tribute by him to Eglon, the king of Moab. Ehud made for himself a sword with two edges, a cubit in length, and he bound it on his right thigh under his clothes. He presented the tribute to Eglon, king of Moab. Now Eglon was a very fat man. When Ehud had finished presenting the tribute, he sent away the people who carried the tribute. But he himself turned back at the idols near Gilgal and said, "I have a secret message for you, O king." And he commanded silence. And all his attendants went out from his presence. Ehud came to him as he was sitting alone in his cool roof chamber. And Ehud said, "I have a message from God for you." And he rose from his seat, and Ehud reached with his left hand, took the sword from his right thigh, and thrust it into his belly. And the hilt also went in after the blade, and the fat closed over the blade, for he did not pull the sword out of his belly, and the dung came out. And Ehud went out into the porch and closed the doors of the roof chamber behind him and locked them. And when he had gone, the servants came. And when they saw that the doors of the roof chamber were locked, they thought, "Surely he is relieving himself in the closet of the cool chamber." And they waited till they were embarrassed. When he still did not open the doors of the roof chamber, they took the key and opened them, and there lay their Lord dead on the floor. Ehud escaped while they delayed, and he passed beyond the idols and escaped to Syria. When he arrived, he sounded the trumpet in the hill country of Ephraim, and the people of Israel went down with him from the hill country, and he was their leader. And he said to them, "Follow after me, for the Lord has given your enemies, the Moabites, into your hand." And so they went down after him and seized the fords of the Jordan against the Moabites and did not allow anyone to pass over. And they killed at that time about 10,000 of the Moabites, all strong, able-bodied men, not a man escaped. And so Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and they had rest for 80 years. Now we know on these first two judges that it says that this thing happened and they had rest for X amount of time, 40 years, 80 years. We see something different on this next judge, Shamgar. Only one verse written about him here. There's another verse in chapter 5, in another section that's about him. But all we know about him, he's the third judge. And there's no time frame after that. So some judges serve for a certain amount of time. Some may have been for one battle or one happening. And that appears what Shamgar is here. Let's read verse 31 of chapter 3. After him, meaning after Ehud, was Shamgar the son of Anath, who killed 600 of the Philistines with an ox goad, and he also saved Israel. Now let's really quick before we enter today, but let's go to chapter 4 real quick. And the people of Israel again did what was evil in the sight of the Lord after who died? Ehud, not Shamgar. Because Ehud had served the 80 years or so forth. That's why Shamgar was probably just a one happening thing. Okay, so it's listed kind of here like it goes straight from Ehud to Deborah, but it doesn't. Shamgar was in between there for that one time. With that, let's go ahead and start Deborah. Fourth judge, prophetess. Unusual in that most judges are said to have judged after the big event. Such and such happened, and he served so many years, and they had peace for so many years. Deborah's different. She's said to have judged before the tale or the story or the big event. She mostly stays in one place, and people come to her for guidance. She's a prophetess. So most of her leadership was people coming to her for advice and so forth. Background of other characters. We have a lot of characters in Deborah's story, so let's look at them real quick. There's the first one is Barak. You're going to hear his name. This is the son of Abinadon. He's the one who leads the Israelite army to defeat the forces of Jabin, King of Canaan. He's also listed in Hebrews chapter. Let's turn to Hebrews chapter 11. This is Barak. Again, Barak's on the good side. Barak is with Deborah. Chapter 11 and verse 32. And what more shall I say? This is where the writer of Hebrews is listing all these characters who have done good things. For time would fail me to tell Gideon and Barak and Samson, Jephthah and David and Samuel and the prophets. And the point being, he did some good things to be listed here in Hebrew. Okay, that's Barak. We're going to hear his name here in a little bit. You're going to hear the name Jabin. Jabin's king of Canaan and Hazor. He oppressed Israel for 20 years, so he's on the bad side. His army included 900 chariots of iron. His army and himself are destroyed in the stories we're going to see. And he's also mentioned in Psalms chapter 83. Let's turn to Psalms chapter 83. And verse 9. And you recognize this later as the story goes on when we get there. Do to them as you did to Midian, as to Sisera and Jabin at the river Kishon. That's the story we're about to read in just a minute. You're going to hear the character's name of Heber. Heber was a Kenite. He was descended from the people of Moses' father-in-law. And we've got to clear up a couple of things about Moses' father-in-law here in just a minute. But again, keeping this Heber, he's descended from the people of Moses' father-in-law. What was Moses' father-in-law's name? Well, he actually had a couple of names. We'll look at that in just a minute. But the point is, he came from them, this Heber. The relevance of this is that he broke off from them and he supported the Israelites' enemy, Jabin. His wife, Jael, we'll see her name later, plays a big role here in this story. She's the one who kills Jabin's captain, Sisera. That's the one with the tent peg and the temple. This is who does this. But this is Heber, is her husband. She must have sided with the Israelites, right? So how did she know of the Israelites? And we'll look at that if we have time. Sisera, remember Jabin's the king. Sisera is his captain of his army. He's the one who gets the tent peg through his temple here. He flees after his troops are routed. And again, he's killed by Jael with a stake through his temple. Now, Hoab's going to be listed in this story. In this story, he's listed as Moses' father-in-law. Let's turn there. Judges 4 and verse 11. I'm trying to get this established before we get there if we have time. Verse 11. Now, Heber, y'all remember that name we went over just a minute ago? Heber, the Kenite, had separated from the Kenites. Remember, he was from the people of Moses' father-in-law. The descendants of who? Hobab. And who was Hobab? The father-in-law of Moses, right? Know what it says? And had pitched his tent as far as way as Oakland Zaman. But you all agree that this Hobab is the father-in-law of Moses, right? That's what it says. Let's see. This may not have been Moses' father-in-law, but rather Moses' father-in-law's son. Let's look and see why I say that. Let's first note that Moses' father-in-law was known by two other names. We're first introduced to him as Reuel. Turn to Exodus chapter 2. Exodus chapter 2 and verse 16 beginning. Now the priest of Midian had seven daughters. And they came and drew water and filled the troughs of water their father's flock. And the shepherds came and drove them away. But Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock. And when they came home to their father, who? Reuel. He said, how is it that you have come to home so soon today? And they said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock. And he said to his daughters, where is he? Why have you left the man? Call him that he may eat bread. And Moses was content to dwell with the man. And he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah. She gave birth to a son and so forth. So according to this, what was Moses' father-in-law's name? Reuel. Not Jethro. But he's called Jethro, Exodus chapter 3, verse 1. Now Moses was keeping the flock of his father-in-law, who? Jethro. The priest of Midian. Is this the same man? The priest of Midian. This is the same guy. So he's going by two different names here. Chapter 4, verse 18. Moses went back to who? Jethro. Who was Jethro? His father-in-law. And said so forth. Chapter 18. Verse 1. Jethro, who's Jethro? The priest of Midian. Moses' father-in-law. So he goes by Jethro and he goes by Reuel. Correct? Y'all agree with that? But we're also told from our reading back in Judges that he goes by this other name, Hobab, right? He said Hobab, Moses' father-in-law. That would be three names. Well, let's see if we find Hobab's name anywhere else and make that occasion. Again, as we noted, Judges chapter 4, verse 11 leads us to think that Moses' father-in-law's name is Hobab. But we also see in Exodus chapter 2, in verse 18, he was called Reuel. Now, we're going to see that this Reuel, and who's Reuel again? Moses' father-in-law, correct? He had a son named Hobab. But I thought Hobab was his father-in-law. Let's turn over to Numbers chapter 10. Is everyone following so far? We know that Moses' father-in-law was definitely named Jethro. We know he was definitely named Reuel. In our Judges reading, it leads us to think that Hobab is a third name. Numbers chapter 10, verse 29. And Moses said to who? Hobab. Who's Hobab? The son of who? Reuel, the Midianite, Moses' father-in-law. So you see there, Hobab is listed as the son of Reuel, who is Moses' father-in-law. Do you all see that? In the end, it really doesn't matter. Nothing changes. The point is, this character we're talking about who left his people, this Hebrew, came from the people of Moses' father-in-law. Whether it came from his actual father-in-law or his father-in-law's son, it's still the same people. That makes sense? But the point is, let's go back to Judges again, to our reading. Verse 11. And when all the people had finished, I'm in Joshua here. 4 and verse 11. Now Heber, the Canaanite, had separated from the Kenites the descendants of Hobab. That's the main point. It's the descendants of Hobab. Even though it lists him as his father-in-law here, as Moses' father-in-law. We see it was probably Moses' father-in-law's son, the same people. Questions about that? Deborah. Again, Jael's husband. Let's go back to Heber one more time. Jael's husband, Heber, who we're talking about, he descends from Moses' father-in-law's people, the Kenites. At some point, these Kenites, who he's descended from, these people of Moses' father-in-law, had settled with the Israelites and were allies. Judges chapter 1 and verse 16. We're still talking about Heber here. And the descendants, verse 16, of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up with the people of Judah from the city of Palms into the wilderness of Judah, which lies in the Negev near Arad. And they went and settled with the people. So this Heber had settled at some point there, or the Kenites had settled with the Israelites, and they were allies with them. They were friends. Then at some point, this Heber separates with his wife, Jael, and they now side with Jabin. But his wife is not. We know that's because she drives the stake to his temple. So either she lived for some time with them among the Israelites, because they settled with them, or if she came after her husband broke off, Heber breaks off, Heber had to teach his wife about these Israelites. How else would she know about them and know to side with them when we get there? Okay? With that, let's go ahead and read Judges chapter 4. The people of Israel did again what was evil in the sight of the Lord after Ehud died. And the Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, king of Canaan, who reigned in Hazor. The commander of his army was Sisera, who lived in Harosheth Haggahim. And the people of Israel cried out to the Lord for help, for he had 900 chariots of iron, and he oppressed the people of Israel cruelly for 20 years. Now Deborah, a prophetess, the wife of Lapidoth, was judging Israel at the time, and she used to sit under the palm of Deborah between Ramah and Bethel in the hill country of Ephraim. And the people of Israel came up to her for judgment. She sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinadab, from Kedesh Naphtali, and said to him, "Has not the Lord, the God of Israel, commanded you? Go gather your men at Mount Tabor, taking 10,000 from the people of Naphtali and the people of Zebulun. And I will draw out Sisera, the general of Jabin's army, to meet you by the river Kishon, with his chariots and his troops, and I will give him into your hand." And Barak said to her, "If you will go with me, I will go. But if you will not go with me, I will not go." And she said, "I will surely go with you. Nevertheless, the road on which you are going will not lead to your glory, for the Lord will sell Sisera into the hand of a woman." And Deborah rose and went with Barak to Kadesh. And Barak called out Zebulun and Naphtali and Kadesh, and 10,000 men went up at his heels. And Deborah went up with him. Now Heber, this is the Heber, the Kenites, had separated from the Kenites the descendants of Hobab, the father-in-law of Moses, we talked about that, and pitched his tent as far away as the oak in Zanamim, which is near Kadesh. When Sisera was told that Barak, the son of Abinadab, had gone up to Mount Tabor, Sisera called out his chariots, 900 chariots of iron, all the men who were with him from Harosheth Haggim, the river Kishon. And Deborah said to Barak, "Up, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go up before you?" And so Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot. And Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Harosheth Haggim. And all the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword, but not a man was left. But Sisera fled away on foot to the tent of Jael. Jael is the wife of Heber, the Kenite. For there was peace between who? Jabin, the king of Hazor, and the wife, or in the house of Heber, the Kenite. So Heber had made peace with Israel's enemy. And Jael came out to meet Sisera and said to him, "Turn aside, my lord, turn aside to me. Do not be afraid." And so he turned aside to her into the tent, and she covered him with a rug. And he said to her, "Please give me a little water to drink, for I am thirsty." And she opened a skin of milk and gave him a drink and covered him. And he said to her, "Stand at the opening of his tent, as if man comes and asks you, 'Is anyone here?' And say, 'No.'" But Jael, the wife of Heber, took a tent peg, took a hammer in her hand. She went softly to him and drove the peg into his temple until it went down into the ground while he was lying fast asleep from weariness. And so he died. Behold, as Barak was pursuing Sisera, Jael went out to meet him. And he said to him, "Come, and I will show you the man whom you are seeking." And so he went with her into the tent, and there lay Sisera dead with a tent peg in his temple. So the point is, how did she know about it? Unless she lived some time with Israelites, or her husband had told her. We'll stop there.